Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Before we get started today, I'd like to welcome the newest member to the Minnesota Military Radio Network to join us, which is KLOH Blazin' Country 1050 out of Pipestone. They'll be airing the show on Sunday evenings at 5:30. And if your favorite station in outstate Minnesota isn't already a member of the network, have them go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, hit the contact button to us, and we'll make the show available to your favorite town in outstate Minnesota. On today's show, we're going to get an American Legion update, and we'll learn about Minnesota's contributions to World War II in Rome and Normandy. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
In 2013, the Minnesota National Guard continued solidifying our role as an important part of our state and national defense in this time of fiscal austerity. More than a decade of war has shaped the Minnesota Guard as an effective force, and our soldiers and airmen embrace the role of being always ready for our state and nation. Our 2013 Interactive Minnesota National Guard Annual Report is now online and ready to share with you, our military friends, supporters, military families, and our employers. I know you'll enjoy reflecting on the fantastic work our force did in 2013. And I believe you will appreciate understanding our objectives for this year. You have supported our soldiers, airmen, and veterans before, during, and after deployments. And together, we have set a standard of excellence for taking care of our most valuable asset, our people. I invite you to go to MinnesotaNationalGuard.org and click on the About Us tab. There, you'll not only find our 2013 annual report, but you can look through the last decade of reports. It's impressive to see how far we have come and to know that success continues to be in our sight for 2014.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Minnesota's Department Commander from the American Legion, Mike Ash. Mike, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Mike, as your year in office ends, I think, in June, is it going pretty quick?
So far, so good. It is. It's moving right along there, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
And today we know you're in Minneapolis, but most days you've been all over the state, haven't you?
I have been, last week especially. We started off a week ago Sunday in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to pick up the National Commander of the American Legion, Dan Dellinger. Once he travels throughout the year, about 300 to 325 days a year, he's on the road.
That sounds like a tougher job than yours, Mike.
It's much tougher, believe me. I felt sorry for him going in just because I thought being away from your family that many days out of the year has got to be tough. But that's not the half of it, because as we drove around, we visited three different posts every day for 4 days. And every day we were living out of a different hotel. So I wouldn't mind living out of a, I can live out of a suitcase for a month out of a in a hotel, but not 30 hotels in a month.
Yeah, his travel schedule's just got to be a gut buster.
Absolutely.
So you traveled, you hit a bunch of American Legions in Minnesota, and they got a chance to meet the National Commander, and of course the Department Commander, that's you. And did you get a long complaint list, or did you have people who were pretty happy with you?
No, actually, I was very surprised. People were very happy to not only see the National Commander, but we had no complaints from anybody saying that I was doing a horrible job or anything. As a matter of fact, I've got quite a few suggestions along the way that they said we got ways we think we could improve our posts, improve the district. And I said, absolutely, that's the theme. My theme this year is communication. And I said, you know, you've got my email, you've got my telephone, you've got my cell phone. You've got my address, so any way you want to get a hold of me, you need to do that, and we need to make the Legion a better organization. Even though it's the best organization on the planet right now, we can make it better.
So you collected up some suggestions that I assume you shared with your officers this year, and you'll be working on those the next 4 months and maybe the next few years.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're going to be doing. And so that when I finally do leave office, I'll be able to leave it in much in real straightened out shape, and hopefully as nice as Commander Pancake left it for me when he left.
We're speaking with Minnesota's American Legion Department Commander Mike Ash on Minnesota Military Radio. Mike, you haven't pounded on the table in here like former Commander Pancake did, but we'll get to that pretty soon. What was the message that the National Commander brought to the state?
Well, the Commander was just talking about since he was in office for less than 10 days, and he was called up on the Hill in Washington, D.C., to testify to Congress concerning sequestration and the government and the government shutdown. He went up there to talk about the fact that how the sequestration was affecting mainly the military families, the military operating procedures throughout the world, and that the only people that were suffering were the veterans. He also told them that they needed to get it together and put their differences aside and come together on some type of a commonality so that they could put together a budget and get something together.
And, of course, we were talking about sequestration because last year a lot of our military personnel had to take some days off without pay. And, of course, that hurts your monthly budget and paying your bills and so forth. But now the Congress has passed the budget for the next 2 years, and I understand sequestration's on the shelf, and we shouldn't have to deal with it for now.
That's what they're saying right now. But I sometimes my trust factor with the government is sometimes a little low. But the commander talked about that, and as a matter of fact, he afterwards while he was up there on the steps, the folks from ABC News talked to him, and they asked him, Who do you blame for this, the Republicans or the Democrats? He said, you know what? I don't blame the left, and I don't blame the right. I blame the Congress, I blame the Senate, and I have blamed the president because they're not doing the job that they were sent to Washington to do. And every single time he got a rousing round of applause, it was kind of like State of the Union address, except in reverse. He was getting the applause because he was telling them that they needed to pull their heads out and get the job done.
Well, Mike, I understand you talked to him a little bit about as part of that budget bill, there was a rollback in some of the pension increases for our military personnel when they retired, and there's been some action on that this week. The House and the Senate both passed a provision. They're sending up to the president, didn't they?
That's right. They passed it last week. The House did, and they said that it was a 1% a year COLA for those veterans the retirees under 62 years of age. They came back with a bill. They passed it unanimously out of the House. However, the same and they just passed it today yesterday with the Senate. However, the problem is that it's going to affect the current veterans, but starting in January 2015, it's going to affect the new retirees. So they're going to be subject to the 1% COLA rollback or the 1% COLA reduction. And we're going to continue to fight that battle up on Capitol Hill until they introduce another bill to say, because the fact of the matter is that when they pass this budget, the president came to our convention 2 years ago, and he said that he would not balance the budget on the backs of veterans. However, and he didn't do it, but he allowed Congress to do it. So Congress put that COLA stipulation in the two-year budget bill, and he signed it. So again, they're trying to balance the budget on the backs of veterans.
So the bill that's passed the House and the Senate this week rolled that back for all of our current service members and veterans, but it's still going to affect future veterans that enlist today, and that's what you're going to go back and try to work on.
That is correct.
Mike, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Commander's Task Force and some of the things that you're working on during the rest of your tour as Department Commander of Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Minnesota's Department Commander from the American Legion, Mike Ash. Mike, we've got to revisit your past a little bit. Nice to have a fellow Air Force guy in here again today.
Absolutely.
Sergeant Ben will get mad at us. He's always bringing in these Army guys, you know.
I know that. You know, the Army's there for some reason. I'm not sure what it is. But after we go in with our aircraft and soften up the ground, they can finally find a place to come in.
You know, when we are on the ground, we're happy to have them out in front of us with the Marines, though, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Commander Ash, we want to talk a little bit about the Commander's Task Force. In Minnesota, we have a thing called the Commander's Task Force. It's made up of the 9 federally chartered veteran service organizations, such as the American Legion, VFW, Purple Hearts, DAV, so on and so forth. And you guys get together once a month or so and try to see how you can work together and what type of things you work on.
Right now, we're working mainly on the legislative portion of introducing legislation for veterans in the state of Minnesota. Currently, what we're working on is veteran small-owned business certification. Currently, to be registered as a veteran-owned small business. It involves a lot of paperwork, and right now you have a better chance of getting that certification as a minority-owned business if you're a minority or a woman, because you don't have to fill out the paperwork that the veterans have to fill out. So right now we're trying to introduce legislation that will soften that up for the veterans, to include the fact that if they're recently released from service, all they need to do is show their DD-214. Veterans with service-connected disabilities will get a break on it. Also that when veterans' small-owned businesses been certified by the Department of Veterans Affairs, they're automatically allowed to move into the Minnesota piece of that.
It's quite a process right now. I went through it last year, and my business is a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business, and it was kind of like getting naked in front of Congress. They wanted to know everything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So anything you can do to make that a little easier, but still make sure they're veterans, would be good.
Oh, that's our biggest piece right there. Another thing we're working on is the disabled veterans vehicle registration reduction. Right now, they're looking for, you have to be 100% service connected veteran to and access certain federal benefits to be able to take advantage of reduced and free registration for your vehicle. And a lot of 100% connected, service connected, and disabled veterans in general have to have their cars specially configured to be able to use them. So we're looking to give them a break as far as their registration goes, so that they can get their vehicle registration for no cost at all, no or low cost. Military retirement tax exemption, something near and dear to my heart. We're one of only 8 states, or 7 states right now, that continue to tax military pensions. We continue to approach the legislature every year to give us a break on that, and we're going to do that again this year. And it really doesn't have so much to do with anything other than getting military members. The legislature looks at it strictly as a reduction in money coming in because of the money they tax. However, when we look at it, we think that if you have more military retirees come to the state, you're going to have that much better of a workforce, because they bring everything that they brought from their 20-plus years in the military with them into the service, into the working community.
So there might be some former Minnesotans that are reluctant to move home because they know their federal pension from the military is going to be taxed.
There are plenty of them, and they live in North Dakota, South Dakota, and other states that don't tax their pensions. And finally, we're working on the veteran homestead tax exemption. Right now, veterans in receipt of the homestead tax exemption, their spouse can apply for that same exemption for 5 years. And we're trying to, but unfortunately the spouse doesn't even know about it. The veterans don't know about it until the veteran dies. And that's one of the things that the state will tell you after he dies or she dies that, oh yeah, you were able to get this, but now that you're gone, you don't get it.
We're speaking with Minnesota's American Legion Department Commander Mike Ash on Minnesota Military Radio. Mike, we're buzzing through time like crazy here. The way the veterans can help is on March 17th. There's going to be Veterans Day on the Hill?
Veterans Day on the Hill, yes. March 17th, and it's going to be at 9 o'clock. So we ask all veterans, all service organizations, wear your hats, come up on the hill and talk to your congressmen and legislators and tell them, We need to see these bills enacted.
So the more veterans we can get up to the Capitol to help with Veterans Day on the Hill, March 17th, the better.
Right.
You get a chance to talk to your Minnesota state legislatures about some of these veterans issues. Mike, we got about 3 minutes left. I want to talk about your commander's project, which is year number two because Don Pancake had the same project. Tell me what it is and how it's going.
It's Legionville. It's where we train the school safety patrol up at just north of Brainerd a little bit in Legionville. It's called Legionville, Minnesota, actually. Right now, we had an old barn up there where we used to train the kids at, and that was torn down. And thanks to Commander Pancake, we got a brand new building up. Right now, we're getting the studding into the interior walls, and the electrical and plumbing is being roughed in. It looks like in March we're going to sheetrock, and April we'll tape off the interior. May we'll paint it, and we're looking at the 4th of July weekend to have a dedication and a formal ribbon-cutting ceremony. But whether we have it then or not, we're going to have it ready for when the kids come up there in the summer.
And how can our listeners help? You've got a website for it.
You can go to www.legionville.com. That's www.legionville.com.
You're still looking for some contributions to
Absolutely.
Finish the funding?
Absolutely. We still need funds to finish the project on schedule, so we're asking everyone to send in a donation soon so that it can be ready for the campers.
Mike, we've got about a minute left. Any final messages for our listeners today?
Well, I just want to let everybody know that American Legion baseball registration has started. We've been extremely lucky. In Minnesota, we've sent two teams to regionals last year, Burnsville and Eden Prairie. Unfortunately, when they got to the regionals, they got pitted against each other. And like Minnesota Vikings coach Denny Green used to say, when two teams play, only one can win. That was quite pithy on his part. And then our Burnsville folks beat the Eden Prairie guys. They went to the World Series in Shelby, North Carolina. When they got there, they had the misfortune of first playing the team that would win the World Series, and then in the elimination bracket, they played the team that would play the team in the final series. So
a little bit of bad luck.
That's right.
Mike, good to see you here in Minnesota Military Radio again. Hope the rest of your year goes quick and you get all your projects done. And I'm sure we'll talk to you before the end of your year as commander, department commander of the American Legion, Minnesota.
Thank you very much, Tom.
This is Mike Ash, our department commander, American Legion, Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about Minnesota's contribution to World War II in Rome and Normandy. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about Minnesota's contributions to World War II in Rome and Normandy. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shelletoe.
As many of you are aware, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has two divisions. The first is the Program and Services Division. Their mission is to provide benefits and services to veterans living in Minnesota. The work done through this department, in support of the County Veterans Service Offices and the federal VA, provide that extra boost in ensuring a higher quality of life for our veterans. The second division is our veterans' homes. Minnesota has five homes located across the state in Silver Bay, Fergus Falls, Laverne, Hastings, and Minneapolis. MDVA has been actively working to upgrade the Minneapolis campus, as well as fielding requests for several additional outstate homes. While we are operating near capacity for federally authorized beds in Minnesota, our goal is to provide the quality care our heroes deserve. As a department, we remain focused on our mission, serving Minnesota veterans and their families.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelletoe. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now in the studio is an old friend of Minnesota Military Radio, Duck Becky, curator of the Minnesota Military Museum. Doug, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Doug, just to refresh our listeners, I know you're a Vietnam veteran and you served in the reserves for many years. And tell us just a little about your military career.
Well, I went in the Army in 1968 and wanted to serve my country. Went to OCS at a young age and got into the 82nd Airborne Division, and then was assigned to Special Forces training, went to Special Forces in Vietnam, came home and went to the university and joined the reserves and stayed in for 18 and a half years. So,
and finished up as a major.
Finished up as a major.
Major, seems like you've been interested in military history going way back for many, many years. How'd you get so interested in it?
Well, I think I attribute it to my father. He was interested in military history. And, of course, growing up in the 50s, everything was World War II history. Walter Cronkite and the 20th Century programs, all these programs on the television, documentaries over and over again about World War II. And, of course, all the veterans surrounded you constantly. And they were talking about it. And then there were a lot of World War I veterans still around in those days. I had teachers in school who were World War I veterans. And so it surrounded me. And I got the bug. You know, you don't pick your interests find you. And history found me, and it's always been my main interest.
And you've been chasing it down ever since.
All the time. And I'm a lucky person because I get to do it and get paid for doing it. Pursuing my interest.
Well, in the Minnesota Military Museum up at Camp Ripley is a fantastic facility, and it's open all summer. The people should stop in, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. In the winter, it's open from on Thursdays and Fridays, and then from the 1st of May till the end of September, we're open every day.
Doug, we asked you to be on the show this week to talk a little bit about World War II. This year is going to be the 70th anniversary of a lot of special things, such as the liberation of Rome, D-Day, many other special events in World War II. Happened in 1944, but I'd like to talk a little bit today about our 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls in World War II, because they're one of the first units to deploy overseas. Could you tell us a little about that?
Right. Well, the 34th has a great history, and like a lot of the National Guard divisions, you often don't hear about them. There's certain units that are high profile, and you always hear about the 101st Airborne and a couple other units. But there were these other units there, and they were slogging through the war every day, day after day after day. And the 34th really has a great history, and we can be very proud of them as our hometown unit. They were organized in 1917 for the First World War, and then came back, were reorganized again for World War in the 20s and 30s. And in 1941, fearing that we were going to get involved in the conflict in Europe, President Roosevelt federalized the National Guard Division. So the 34th Division went to Camp Claiborne, Louisiana, thinking they're going to be there for a year. They're training. It's coming up towards December, and they're thinking we're going to go home. And all of a sudden, Pearl Harbor happens. They're the first unit sent overseas. In January, the first elements were already on their way over. January of 42, the first elements were already on their way to Northern Ireland. They trained there until late October. They were put on ships, most of the men not really knowing where they were going. And they were in on the initial invasion of North Africa, landing outside Algiers. The first elements went in with the very first waves in the invasion on the 7th and 8th of October of November 1942. Within about 10 days, the rush for Tunisia was on. And so they moved hundreds and hundreds of miles, trying to get there before the Germans. They didn't. But the 175th Field Artillery on the 16th of November fired the first artillery rounds in the European theater of operations. So another first unit sent overseas. Now they're the first unit to fire artillery rounds in the European theater. And of course, first units to land in North Africa. They fought through the Tunisian campaign. The rest of the unit, the division came in January. They fought through the Tunisian campaign. They participated in all the major battles. The big one for them was Hill 609. They were there for the German surrender in the middle of May. They didn't participate in the Sicily operation. They were not on the initial invasion of Salerno into Italy, but the 151st Field Artillery was. They supported the 36th Division and played a critical role in stopping a German counterattack at Salerno. Then it was marching up the boot of Italy.
We're speaking with Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum on Minnesota Military Radio, about Minnesota's contributions to World War II in Rome and Normandy. Doug, I think you were explaining to me earlier that the 34th Infantry Division, our Red Bulls, started out as mostly Minnesotans, but as they deployed and as they went to Africa, as the reserves and the replacements came in, it migrated and evolved to be a United States unit, didn't it?
That's right. The 34th Division was composed mostly of Minnesotans and Iowans, units from both states. But after they got to Camp Claiborne, people get hardship discharges, they're sent home for various reasons. Some people are sent to schools for training for other things. And then in the spring of 41, the first draftees came in. They reinstituted the draft. The first wave was primarily Minnesotans or Midwesterners. The second wave that came in July was from all over the country. So very quickly, the number of Minnesotans started to dissipate within the unit. But all through the end of the war, right to the end of the war, they maintained a strong core of Minnesotans.
And Doug, they went through Africa, then up into Italy, and it culminated with liberating Rome in a tough fight through Italy. How long did that take, and what critical role did the division play?
Right. Well, they landed about the 20th of September, and the main body of the division landed about the 20th of September. And then it was a case of fighting their way all the way up the boot, three times crossing the Volturno River, Mount Pantano, and all the way up to Monte Cassino. And the big fight for the 34th came in the end of January 1944. They fought their way all the way up to the edge of the Abbey. Some advanced units actually got up to the Abbey, but they just didn't have anything left, and there were no reinforcements to keep the battle going. They'd almost won, but they just couldn't keep it going. And they stayed there until the middle of February in their positions. Men were exhausted. The weather was terrible. It was horrible conditions. And some of them literally had to be carried off the mountain when they were replaced. And they came down, they went into rest camps. As they were leaving, they watched Monte Cassino getting bombed. And then they were sent up to, they went to rest camps, and then in March they were sent, April, they were sent to Anzio. And they participated in the breakout from Anzio and the march to Rome. And that was a very controversial part of the war, because the Germans were on the run. They were trying to get away as fast as they could. They declared Rome an open city. And we were well on our way to cutting them off, the German 10th Army. And General Mark Clark made the decision to not cut off the Germans, but to get into Rome as quickly as he could. He wanted to capture Rome.
This was spring of 1944.
This would have been, they actually got in there on the 34th Division came in on the 4th of June. And Mark Clark wanted to get his picture taken and everything. That all happened. And then the units went through Rome. They went through fairly quickly, got through, and reestablished contact with the Germans that had escaped. So it was very critical. And then, of course, it was slogging up the boot.
So this was a tough test and a lot of hard work, and we lost a lot of men. But the 34th Infantry Division and the rest of the United States troops over there in Italy, engaged many, many German divisions.
That's right.
That wouldn't be otherwise available for Normandy in a few days.
It was about 20 divisions. It was horrible conditions in the mountains, rocky, little cover, muddy, wet, cold. The winter of 45, they were in the mountains before Bologna, and it was snowy and cold, miserable conditions. And then in April of 45 was the attack through Bologna up into the Po Valley, and brought the 34th Division all the way up to the Swiss-Austrian border, chasing the Germans.
Doug, I understand that the 34th Infantry Division served more days in frontline combat than any other unit in World War II. Is that the truth?
The division did, and its 175th Field Artillery Battalion served more days in combat than any other battalion. So they had lots of firsts, and they really had a brilliant record, and they deserve more credit outside of Minnesota than they get. It was a great story, great story.
Legendary division, and they did a heck of a job in World War II, didn't they?
That's right, they did.
Doug, we have to take a short break. When I come back, I want to talk about D-Day and Normandy and some of the logistics surrounding that and the impact that the division made engaging the enemy in Italy. We're talking to Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum, about Minnesota's contributions to World War II. And Doug, that was music from Normandy. What in the world was that?
It was one of the classic songs of World War II. I don't think there was ever anyone who served anywhere in the Mediterranean or European theater who didn't hear that song at some point. It was a German song, Lili Marleen. And it's one of the all-time classic songs from World War II.
Doug, we got to keep this tight. We got about 5 minutes. D-Day. How big a operation? I think it was Operation Overlord. How big of an undertaking was that?
It was massive. It was incredible. And one of the most incredible parts of it is when you look at what the United States had in 1940 or 41 versus what we were able to employ just 4 years later. In 1940, we were something like the 16th sized military in the world behind Holland and Romania. And by 1944, we were able to launch this incredible operation, travel all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, thousands of ships, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of aircraft, millions of men and women, and launch an invasion across the English Channel and then sweep all the way across Europe. And it's hard to imagine. All these people had to be fed every day. All the vehicles had to have gasoline. They all had to have toothpaste and shoelaces. So everything from aircraft to toothpicks had to be supplied.
Water, ammunition,
everything. And food, clothing, everything. All their medical needs had to be taken care of. Just this massive, massive undertaking. And all from scratch in a four-year period, all created. And it's mind-boggling when you think about what the industrial capacity of the United States and the organizational abilities of the United States government and the military put together in 4 years to accomplish the Normandy landings and then all the other operations that were going on. Simultaneously, all the activities in the Pacific, the Italian theater, everything else that was going on. It's just amazing operation.
The D-Day was coming up this spring, 70 years ago, June 6th. How many boats, how many men? I mean, how big of an operation was it?
It was massive. There were 170,000 assault troops on the basic invasion. 4,100 ships and landing craft. I don't have a number on the aircraft, but thousands of aircraft involved. And of course, one of the things we have to remember with the Air Force, I've talked to Air Force veterans, for them, D-Day wasn't such a big deal. It was just another day at work. They'd already been bombing and strafing and running missions all the time. And they got to look down and see the invasion fleet, which one veteran described to me as an airborne veteran flying over to his jump into Normandy, looked down, saw the invasion fleet, and said it looked like pepper scattered on a mirror. Thousands of ships spread out below him as far as the eye could see. But the logistics were incredible, just incredible. There was only one Minnesota unit that was actually involved, Minnesota Aviation Unit, the 109th, had been the 109th Observation Squadron, Minnesota National Guard. By the time it got to Normandy, it was under the 9th Air Force, and it was the 109th Tactical Reconnaissance Squadron. And they flew about 1,600 combat missions in the European theater, taking pictures of targets and the effects of bombings and that.
Doug, as the year plays on, we want to have you back on a couple of times and talk about that invasion and some other things that happened, but just got about 30 seconds left. Can you imagine what it felt like to sit in one of those landing crafts knowing you're going to the beach and you're going to be under such heavy fire from the Germans?
Yeah, I've talked to some men about it. And one thing you have to keep in mind, that most of these men had never been in combat before. There were a few men in the 1st Infantry Division, but the vast majority were green troops, even the Rangers, the elite units, the airborne troops. Some from the 82nd had been in significant combat, but the 101st was completely a green unit. The 29th Division leading the way, the 4th Division, they were all green troops, so they'd never been in this before. And maybe there's some benefit to being ignorant of what you're getting into. There was some concern about the 1st Division going in with some experience, but they all did well.
And our men did a fantastic job 70 years ago. Doug, sorry we're out of time. When you come back later, a couple times later this year, we'll get into a little more detail of some of those things that happened almost 70 years ago. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you very much.
This is Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Patrick Kelly. He's also a retired United States Navy captain. Director, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, thanks. It's great being back with you.
Sir, we're certainly happy to have you calling in and joining us once a month on the show. Can you tell us, I understand the parking ramp out there is almost ready.
You know, that's an item of great interest to veterans and staff. And so it's been a long winter, been cold, and so we had an 18-month project that was supposed to finish up in the fall of this year, but, you know, the contractors were way ahead of schedule. So we had hoped to open it this month. It's more likely going to be March. But, yeah, we are excited to add, you know, about 500 new parking spaces out there, and that's going to make it a lot easier for veterans to get to their appointments on time, and you'll stay out of the cold. So that's a big project. We're anxious. The veterans are anxious, and it's about ready to go.
Certain times of the day, driving around looking for a parking spot isn't much fun. I'm glad that's going to be over, sir.
I know you're a patient of ours, and I'm sure you've been through that yourself. So it's going to be, it's something I hear a lot from veterans, and again, they are absolutely right. You know, we need to make that part of their appointment easier. Care is great, quality is terrific, but sometimes it's just hard with some of the simple things. So we're gonna make that a lot better here pretty soon.
Director, I understand you had a special day on Friday.
Yeah, you know, last Friday was our national salute to veteran patients, and so once a year we hold a big event really intended to honor our veteran inpatients here, and we invite community leaders and a number of veteran service organizations and county veteran service officers, and so we had a good turnout at a very nice event, congressmen, National Guard leaders, Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, and as I mentioned, a good turnout by our CVSOs and Veteran Service Officers. We even had a beauty queen here, so we had a great event. And part of the event is that we take groups around and we tour them through the facility, and we take Valentine's Day cards and other gifts that we've gotten from community members, schools, and school children. And we take them and we deliver those to veterans and we give them a personal thanks and we try to get our VIPs matched up in the groups and we take them around and visit all of our inpatient areas. And this is the 36th year that we've done this. It's a national event, 36th year we've done it here. And we can't do enough for our veterans and we can't do enough for our inpatient hospitalized veterans. So it was a great event, happens once a year, and I think it was my first time here as the director, and I was really pleased and impressed with the work that our volunteer services staff did on putting it together, and I think it was appreciated by our veterans. So it was really a terrific event.
Director Kelly, when we think of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, we think of the facility out at the airport, but it's much more than that, and you've got some new facilities coming up, don't you?
Yeah. So good question, Tom. So this spring and summer, we're opening two new clinics. In our vernacular, we call them CBOX. Those are our community-based outpatient clinics, and we're opening the first new one to open will be in Albert Lea, and that's going to be early April. We're targeting around the 1st of April. And what we are doing now in anticipation of that is that, you know, we're reaching out to veterans who live within 30 miles of that clinic, and we're going to be sending them letters, and we're going to talk to them about seeking care for those that are not enrolled in the system, you know, seeking care at that clinic. And there will be some veterans who get their care here in Minneapolis who will elect to get their primary care done there in Albert Lea. So we are doing that now, and in addition, the contractor, Valor is the name of the contractor, will have its outreach community coordinator in the community, and they're going to be visiting the VFWs and the Legions and colleges in the area to get the OAF, OIF veterans. And so, again, that's likely to be an April opening. We're shooting for around the 11th of April, not official yet or formal, but that's the targeted date, and those specific dates will be coming out very soon. Additionally, and the second clinic that I mentioned is going to be our Shakopee clinic, and we are going to do all of those same things in Shakopee about 2 months later. So around early June, we hope to cut a ribbon on that clinic, and again, that's going to be the same contractor, the same types of services to veterans in the Shakopee area. And again, we'll be doing an outreach event for them, we do have a large number of veterans who live in that area, many of whom seek their care here in Minneapolis. So this will be a good thing. I mean, one of the things we always try to do is to take care nearest the veterans as we can, so to minimize that drive, to minimize the parking problems, the traffic. And so, you know, new clinics, Albert Lea in April, Shakopee in June, those will be two nice additions. And I hope that provides a good service for veterans.
Director, sounds like you're going to have a busy year, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us on Minnesota Military Radio.
My pleasure, Tom.
Thank you, sir. That was the director of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, Patrick Kelly. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mike Ash, Doug Becky, Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we hear about the Minnesota National Guard's efforts to go green. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.